Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of the Cure Talks Cancer Podcast. Each week, we'll be hearing from patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, and healthcare professionals to do what Cure does best: provide cancer updates, research, and education. In this week's episode, we spoke with Dr. Elizabeth Poyner, a gynecologic oncologist and advanced pelvic surgeon, who recently led a discussion during Susan G. Komen Greater New York City's Sex and Breast Cancer Conference about how patients can work to improve their sexual health while going through cancer and its treatments. Dr. Poyner, who discussed how a breast cancer diagnosis can impact a patient's libido, encourages her patients not just to survive, but thrive by speaking with their doctors.
Women's libido is extremely complex, right? It's truly the connection between the mind and the body. So there are physiologic issues that occur both in the brain with breast cancer treatment, along with impacts on the body and the physicality of the body itself. So just starting from above and going to below with the brain, just the stress of having cancer, being diagnosed with cancer, living with cancer can cause significant stressors in one's life, actually. And stress for women actually can be a big hindrance to libido and sexual desire. The treatments that we use for breast cancer, the anti-estrogen treatments, such as selective estrogen receptor modulators like tamoxifen or aromatase inhibitors, can actually impact the brain. There's estrogen receptors all throughout the brain, actually. And so these drugs can actually impact the brain and can impact a woman's sexual desire. And these are areas that are currently being studied and have not been well researched in the past. Then just with the physicality, having breast cancer surgery, having a mastectomy can obviously change one's body image, one's perception of her body. For many women, breasts are a sexual organ. They're part of our erogenous zones, actually, so that, of course, the impact of having a mastectomy or bilateral mastectomies can be significant. Even a lumpectomy, studies have shown, can be significant in terms of a woman's impact and this perception of her and perception of her body, actually. And then just moving again to below for vaginal health and vulvar health, a lot of the treatments for breast cancer, of course, are related to estrogen deprivation, as we mentioned above, with the brain, and can affect vaginal health and lead to vaginal dryness, atrophy, painful sex. And if one is having painful sex, that can, of course, impact libido. Other issues which also arise in terms of cancer-related depression, right? It's not unusual to have a reactive depression related to the situation of developing cancer. And some of our antidepressants can actually significantly impact a woman's libido and sexual desire. So the diagnosis or a history of breast cancer can have a very large impact on libido.
Okay, so in terms of breast cancer and quality of life, we always look at things like quality of life with health and especially cancer. How frequently would you say patients bring up the topic of sexual health? And would you say this topic is kind of taboo to bring up?
So that's a great question. We proactively ask the people who are in our practice about their sexual health. We have a questionnaire that we will have for our patients that they will fill out either the day they are seeing us now with our new coronavirus COVID restrictions, right? We give everybody their informs the night before to fill out on their own computers, right? And we specifically ask about vaginal dryness, vaginal health, sexual desire. So we actually proactively ask about these issues. And, you know, the studies have also shown that if you don't ask about it, some women will be embarrassed to talk about it, quite frankly. I think that, and this is why conferences like this are so important to let women know, look, you're not alone. And, you know, 70% of women with breast cancer have some impact on their sexuality and sexual health. And so you're not alone. Ask your doctor about it or ask your healthcare practitioner about it. Super, super, super important. We've also actually discovered, it's very interesting because I've done a number of these Zoom kind of conferences actually during this time of shutdown and shelter in place. And what we've learned is you can sign on to a conference anonymously, right? You don't have to have your name there. You don't have to have your picture there. You can learn a lot and you can ask questions with anonymity also. So if an individual doesn't want to really present herself with these questions, she can do it a little anonymously on a conference actually, which I think is quite brilliant in terms of thinking about how to get women involved in this dialogue, in this conversation. But women do suffer with issues with sexuality after any cancer diagnosis, basically. And it's up to us as physicians to bring it up, and healthcare practitioners to bring it up with our patients and those that we care for, and to actually bring it up in a empathetic fashion, not a threatening fashion, but to really allow that dialogue.
Why is it important for patients to know that, you know, it's okay to bring up these issues and not push them off as it's just another side effect of my treatment, I'm okay to deal with this? Why is it important for them to find alternative ways to actually push through it?
So a woman's sexuality, for each and every woman, has different meanings, right? It can be life-affirming. Sexuality can be life-affirming. It's connecting. It's, sex is great for mental health, physical health. We have a whole basically laundry list of things that sex is good for, ranging from mental health, feeling better about life in general, release of endorphins, to cardiac health, even for prevention of high blood pressure and coronary and heart attacks. So that a woman's sexuality, again, there is not a normal, right? There is a normal for each woman, right? And it is also important for relationship issues also, right? So relationships can suffer. Some don't. Some have their own normalcy in terms of sexuality. Other relationships have a normalcy that would be quite disrupted by problems with a woman's sexuality. So to coin a term, we try in our practice to encourage you survive to thrive, not just to survive, you know. And the survive to thrive does not come from me. It comes from Shasharit, actually. I think they were the first people who used that terminology. But I think it's so descriptive. You know, we want to have a healthy life and a joyful life. And for many women, not all, their sexuality is a big component of it, or a component of it at least.
So in terms of libido and decreased libido in these patients, what are some ways that they can help overcome the decrease?
You know, and moving from, there are some medications for premenopausal women that one can explore with their physicians. But we do a lot of work in our practice going right back to stress management, healthy nutrition, and just good lifestyle techniques. And then also treating vaginal atrophy and vaginal health problems, right? So addressing the brain, addressing the hypothalamic pituitary axis, which is how we interpret our outside situations, whether that's stress from work or stress from, you know, going for chemotherapy. So one thing that we really focus on is stress and stress management. That can be through meditation, finding joyfulness in the day. Exercise is great for stress management. Then looking towards healthy nutrition, we know that women who don't have healthy nutrition actually have a higher likelihood of having sexual dysfunction. So eating a great plant-based diet, avoiding inflammatory foods, avoiding sugar as much as possible, staying in shape, staying physically fit, and then specifically also addressing vaginal health issues, which can be a very large problem for many women who are going through breast cancer treatments. And it's interesting because women will still come to me saying, you know, nobody really has offered a solution for this problem for me, or nobody's really talked about it so much. I think at some really great institutions, of course, people have programs and have a dialogue about it, but not everybody has access to the greatest institutions, right? So it's super important for women to realize that there is something that you can do about maintaining better vaginal health, because if sex hurts, you're really not going to want to have sex. So it's like, this is the first area that we really address in our practice, is good, great vaginal vulvar health and taking care of vaginal atrophy or vaginal thinning.
And one of the things you had mentioned was physical activity. What are some activities or exercises that patients can do to help increase their libido?
You know, we're actually now we're at a point where we're prescribing exercise as medicine, right? And whether that's endurance training, strength training, strict cardio, you know, weight training, these are questions that we're beginning to, people are beginning to look at, like what is the best exercise to prescribe? And we are not at that point yet. So what I counsel my patients is take 30 minutes out of your day, actually, and do some type of exercise. That may be walking to get your heart rate up. That may be running. That may be resistance training. We do know, though, with high intensity training, actually, that that releases testosterone and androgens and are associated with higher DHEA levels and androgen levels. And androgen levels, higher androgen levels in women are associated with a higher libido or a better sex or a better sex drive. So that I think that's in the realm of stay tuned for more. I think people are really beginning to look at this, actually, in terms of what type of exercise to recommend. But I try to keep it really simple. I think sometimes we get really, we try to prescribe very complex lifestyle recommendations, which can be overwhelming, actually. So I try to counsel patients, choose one thing, you know, and take small steps and choose one thing. Maybe it's exercise and some, you know, plant-based diet, but don't, I don't try not to get overcomplicated. So I try to recommend to my patients 30 minutes every day, some form of intentional exercise.
And for some patients who may consider, let's say, taking supplements to enhance their libido, what advice would you offer them when they start to consider those options?
Talk to your oncologist. Super important. I mean, you know, supplements are interesting because they are extremely active, and that's really good and that's really bad, right? So the problems with supplements are they are not as well studied as, an FDA-approved drug is. They don't go through that rigorous testing. There is limited quality control, so you're basically depending on the brand, right, and what they're doing. So that you have to be really careful. So knowledge, you know. So anytime we begin to prescribe topical estrogens, any type of hormones, any type of supplements in our practice, the breast oncologist is always the leader of that team. You know, cancer treatments are have a multidisciplinary approach to them. And so there's not just one person working in isolation recommending treatment for a patient. Every treatment has an impact on the other aspects of that, of the care of that patient. So for example, when we start to talk about supplements in our practice, the first thing I do is I speak to the oncologist. What is your view on this, right? Do you allow this for your patients? And then we want to really research the supplements. We want to be investigatory about them. We want to be curious about them. We don't want to just read a label and say it's all okay, because for some supplements, they have phytoestrogenic compounds in them, right? So the body sees these compounds in some supplements as estrogenic, and of course that would be bad for some women, potentially bad for some women. They need to be studied. Some phytoestrogens probably don't impact cancer cells the same way as frank estrogen does, but really is have a conversation. Don't just buy one off the counter and start taking it, because that's the other issue with supplements. You can just go and just buy them without any type of guidance. So always get guidance, get your oncologist involved. And when you begin to talk about supplements, get somebody who knows what they're talking about and is investigatory about what they're speaking about also. So these are real agents that really impact your body, right? And so you always want to have that, you always want to have those conversations with the people caring for you. Don't just go to the health food store and start buying things.
Okay. So then also, other than supplements, what are some natural therapies that patients could consider and could discuss with their physician and oncologist?
I think, you know, especially for vaginal health, vulvar vaginal health, right? So topical estrogen for many women, very low dose topical estrogen may be safe for these women, right? Again, I always speak with the oncologist. People have differing views on this, but the data really suggests that for most, it is actually safe, very, very extremely low doses. We also use natural therapies for the vaginal health. CBD oil is one. You can use CBD oil directly into the vagina, or you can use it orally. Actually, we use we talk about coconut oil, almond oil for good vaginal health, for natural therapies that are going to be would have low impact in terms of systemic therapies. But again, any type of natural oral supplement, again, speak with the oncologist. Maca is one. L-arginine is one that we will speak about with our patients also. And then natural therapies that are related to stress management, exercise, nutrition, and good sleep. Those are just going to benefit your health overall. Those are not going to be, you know, those are not going to be detrimental. And with nutrition, again, a word that I use is moderation. Actually, you don't want to eat one food group over and over, one type of seed over and over, because again, they may have phytoestrogens in them. And so you don't want to expose yourself to high levels of something that which may be harmful. But again, a great variety of diversity, eating the rainbow of fruits and vegetables, good healthy exercise, good healthy sleep, good healthy stress management, such as meditation, or whatever, you know, running, whatever is your way to relieve stress. But those endeavors or those lifestyle changes are just going to be great for your overall cardiac health, anti-inflammatory, are going to help your body overall, and especially your immune system, which is also important with cancer management.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.